pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You need to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is hit me up there, and I'll do my best to respond to whatever it is that might be on your mind. Coming up on the program this morning, we'll kick it off here in about 30 minutes with Mark Shirey. He's a state lawmaker from the west part of Mobile County, West Mobile, I should say. That's in about 30 minutes. Been a little bit, but been meaning to get him on. It's just trying to make the schedule work, and we finally made it work today. Then about an hour later, his colleague from Jefferson County, Danny Garrett, a state lawmaker who's also the chairman of the Education Trust Fund in the Alabama House of Representatives, wanted some time on the program, so we're happy to oblige and looking forward to that discussion. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, since it is Tuesday, we'll hear from my friend Will Hampson. There's some elections going on, and there's a few municipal elections, I believe, around the state today. Auburn and Huntsville, I know. But some elections, we'll probably with him about what's going on around the country and just kind of keep an eye out on that as the primary season winds down for this midterm cycle. So you want to make sure you stick around for that. A few things in the news. A lot of people talking about El Saeed on Jesse Waters last night on Fox News. I think there was a question if he was he asked Jesse Waters if he was circumcised. I don't know. It was just sort of a very bizarre thing, but kind of illustrated kind of the temperament of DSA candidates and what's going on there. That is intriguing. We already knew a lot of this from the get go. The more and more they're just trying to make this a campaign issue, point these differences out. And they're pretty significant differences that are out of the mainstream of American culture. But will it work? What if we've just been wrong about this all along? And this is the way the world's going to be someday. And we're heading down this path of transgender athletes and reparations or whatever comes to your mind just out of the cultural mainstream. That's sort of at least in the last 24 hours, pretty big deal. Also, Supreme Court ruled 6-3 to lifted injunction on the Trump administration's effort to curb mail-in voting. The lawfare. The problem with the lawfare and the left, it worked for them. It works for them short term. They're able to slow the president down, sure. And it was frustrating early on. But the more and more this goes on and continues and the Supreme Court has to get involved, sometimes they rule in favor of the left, but a lot of times we're actually defining the executive authority and power in this country. Things that like both sides used to kind of accept. How many lawsuits were filed to try to slow down Biden or Obama? But when it comes to mind, I guess maybe Obamacare. But it wasn't, they weren't filing lawsuits right and left in federal court over like putting Donald Trump's name on the Kennedy Center or, you know, the building the White House ballroom or whatever. And the Supreme Court just is ruling in favor of the executive branch every single time. just over and over and over again. And when this happens, I mean, the Supreme Court is the high court of the land. It has a little more of a permanency than when the lower court does it. Gets the brakes pumped on whatever it is the Trump administration was trying to do. And it becomes just a part of executive power forever until the next court case comes along and maybe the Supreme Court tries to reverse it. But the lawfare is a two-edged sword. And we're like seeing a lot of this lately. And it's at that time in the cycle. So Trump's elected, or reelected, we should say, in 2024, sworn in 2025. He does a bunch of things in his first 100 days that end up trying to slow him down in the federal court. And the legal arguments aren't very well thought out, probably. It's just a rush to whatever we got to do. Stop this guy. We got to stop this guy. Throw everything we can at him. But when you do that, you're establishing precedent. And like I said, it has the impact of an act of Congress almost, because it becomes hard to reverse in the future. It's as if elections aren't supposed to have consequences. Congress should have a say, I guess, and they could pass. There are avenues to stop the Trump administration by passing a law saying you can't do this, but Congress isn't able to do that. I suspect even under Democrat control, it wouldn't be able to do that. It's kind of fascinating that you're mortgaging the future for a short-term political victory. And maybe this is actually a good thing. Let's just have the lawfare, get it out in the open, put it in front of a court, and let the judges rule on it, then ultimately the justices. And the thing an executive branch has over, say, you and I, is they can expedite a lot of the legal maneuvering. It will get bogged down in the courts for 10 years, instead it'll just be 2 years or whatever that may be. A year and a half. We're still in the data center. The data center revolution. Kind of interesting, a little Montgomery battle here. The state wants to To slow this down. They're trying to, you know, you hear a lawmaker. Well, we'll talk. We got a couple of lawmakers coming on. They want to impose moratoriums, but the county commissions, they have their own association. Sonny Brassfield, who we've had on a few times, I probably should reach out to him soon. Like, whoa, you want to put these moratoriums on our ability to zone? You want to tell us, the county governments, what we can and cannot allow at the state level? As they might say, 67 little laboratories of democracy in Alabama. And every time, you know, the last couple of efforts in the Alabama legislature were fought. Like, these guys, obviously the tech companies are going to be lobbied up. But then it becomes a question about control and power. And you're essentially at the state level trying to take power away from the counties. But it's just, as we've watched a lot of times, these county commissioners under the framework say there's not much we can do about a lot of this. at least that was the case, I think, with the solar farms. I guess they could pass something, but what we've learned in Baldwin County, at least, with all these developments going up, it's some of these municipalities have tried to say, okay, you bought that piece of land, that parcel of land, you can't put condominiums or garden homes or, you know, whatever development that you have, you know, you have your plans for, because the people here just don't want to, you know, this many more residents in their community. And then they go to court because the property owner sues. Then you, the taxpayer, have to foot the legal bill. And then they lose. And it happens a lot. The private property rights. But there's all these other concerns. I you know, traffic. With obviously the zoning requirements, water, sewer, but if the tenant is, or the landholder is willing to foot the bill for that, I guess, then what's the objection? But a lot of this is done with the understanding everything's going to be okay. It's not zoned for anything in particular. And then, community movement starts and starts raising objections to it, probably on Facebook. And suddenly, it heads to court. The local town council, city council, whatever, county commission tries to put some kind of prohibition in place, and then it heads to court. And they lose. But it's not really the Mobile fight. I think it's up in Lowndes County in the Black Belt. I was kind of talking to some people I think are going to be really involved in the Trump administration, and they're convinced the data centers are the right way to go building them here. But they want to put them in some places that are off the beaten path. That won't create these concerns, at least with the infrastructure. And then the argument becomes, well, it's an eyesore, you know. I think there's a trade-off here. We've talked about it on this program before. Maybe if you want to put this big facility in our community, then you need to get back to the community. You need to put up some kind of structure with some kind of community investment, be it daycare or, you know, a park or something of that sort. And it becomes a good little trade-off. How you do that within the legal confines is tricky, but if you could kind of do this off in a side discussion without exploring all these legal options, rather than go spend a couple $1 million in court, how about spend $1 million toward this or that? So, like I said, there's a fight going on. The county governments don't really like the idea of a one-size-fits-all state-level approach to streamlining or moratoriums or whatever it may be regarding data centers. 251-343-0106. If you want to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is text me. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Most Curtis Slow was the finest pickup to ever play the blues. I saw the light, I saw the light. No more darkness, no more night. Now I'm so happy, no sorrow inside. Praise the Lord, I saw the light.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. Mark Shirey coming up in just a few minutes. So please stay tuned for that. Let's see here. Text line 251-343-0106. That's how you interact with the program. Let's see. Butter Knife kicks it off here. Uh-oh. The text line giving me heartburn here. Here we go. Butter Knife. The clean energy for the data centers, Hyundai currently purchases clean energy, I believe, from Texas. Facebook choose to build theirs own in Stockton. Just because a data center is built into Blackville does not mean it does not affect another part of the state. All this stuff should be public knowledge and voted on before they approve the data center. Who votes on it? Butter knife. Are we going to put a referendum to the people? I suppose we could. But do we do direct democracy like this? Mike, there would be no DSA growth if Republicans have implemented conservative America First policies. But between the boomers and Trumpsters, they still push their regime change and fiscal policies that have further divided America's financial classes. But some of it, Mike, the divisions aren't fiscal conservative or, you know, populism. It's this culture stuff. It's culture. That's where I think people are like, oh, that's what you want to do with our schools or our youth sports or. Well, you know, I think it's a little deeper than just, oh, Trump's bombing Iran or he's trying to import Argentinian beef. I mean, I'm not saying that's not important a part of this, but there's a real, really what's fueling it. There are real divisions in this country. Some of it is, I think, immigration. Some of it is just. You know, this woke thinking kind of going to its an illogical extreme. But, I mean, it's something to be aware of. Pat writes, I think they know what they're doing in 4 to 8 years, whenever. The courts will simply say, look, guys, we ruled on this before. Would the Dems try it? Yeah, I think the Democrats are going to try it. But. Pat, like, you know, I know it seems a little off-putting how Trump is putting his name on stuff or, you know, but Democrats did this when they were taking down these monuments. I'm not, you know, they are kind of the same in principle. They were changing things. They were adding their own wrinkles. And maybe it went through the courts, but I'm telling you, like, it's the same sort of philosophy that elections have consequences, and they're taking down Robert E. Lee statues or, you know, all these relics from the Confederacy. And it's absolutely virtue signaling. I don't know what it is, egotism or whatever with Trump, but it's the same idea. If they could do that, then he could do this. Because they've already done it. A named texter says, but we have a rigged Supreme Court. A named texter, hey, Jeff, as broke as Mobile and Pritchard are, why wouldn't a data center be the main topic of conversation? I think, I don't know about Mobile and Pritchard. How much money does it bring in? These things do have at least initially, a positive economic impact. Like I said, I was looking at some polling. I think it was Fox News, which, you know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's terrible. But the concerns, I mean, yes, there's the AI concern some of you have articulated on this show. But the environmental concerns, and I think these data center tech AI sort of thing, they have horrible messaging. And they just like when they try to change the PSC, they went for the gimmick. If we don't do it, China's going to do it. I think you kind of got to at least acknowledge some of the real concerns and not try to do like this trick play run around, end around. We talk about that more later on in the program. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
Every gambler knows that the secret
is it's midnight in Montgomery.
Welcome back to the Jeff Porter Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. We'll get to more of your texts a little later on in the program, so please make sure you stick around for that. Joining us now, he's on the road, but we're glad we could get him. He represents Westmobile, parts of Westmobile County, but Mark Shirey, State Representative Mark Shirey, is with us. Doc, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Jeff. Thank you for having me back on, sir.
Hey, thank you for making time for us. Glad we can make it work. Well, let's start here. These election cycle off seasons, a lot of just kind of big picture stuff going on. But how's it been for you? Anything showing up on your radar as we head into November?
Oh, wow. We're getting busier and busier. Luckily, I'm blessed not to have an opponent this time. I think it's better for my wife than me. But we're getting busier and busier with things that are going to come up in the next session.
Yeah, and the things that come up next session, you have a new governor, almost up and down, a completely new executive branch. Some new lawmakers, does that sort of change the approach, going into this the new quadrennium?
I think it does. I think we're going to do last year was my freshman year. So freshman year, you kind of learn the ropes, learn where everything is, try to find where the bathrooms are, things like that, fill out the administration. I think we're going to do the same thing on my next term, because we'll be in a new state house. Like you said, a new administration, new governor. Two of my three committees will have new chairmen, new ranking majority members. So we've got a lot of turnover just in my sphere of influence. So it'll be very, very interesting. And first term of the quadrennium is always very interesting anyway.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the new, I guess, referring to the health committee, Paulie taking the helm of majority leader. Jeff Sorrell's going to be the new chairman, but you've been very active on that committee in your first 4 years. What do you expect? Do you expect any kind of changes significant?
I really don't know. I don't know the members of the committee yet. They'll get those signed during the organizational meetings. I was fortunate enough to be appointed to the vice chair of that committee. So I worked real close with Jeff, great guy. I think we'll have a lot of stability there. The other two committees are the ones that'll be a little bit less stable, but should be, like I say, very interesting. The health committee is always busy. We've got a lot of things coming up in the health committee. We always deal with Medicaid issues. Not as much funding, but just different things, different coverage issues and things like that.
Well, the health committee was like really on the radar during the COVID pandemic. And we I guess, kind of became aware of how the bureaucracy works. It was sort of a civics lesson at the time. Things have seemed to have, at least the situationally, have improved. Do you think that discussion's still out there?
I think it is, but we did some changes to what can happen in emergency situations. The fact is, one of my bills was actually dealing with the state health officer and the power that he had. So I think some changes came about from that, and I think they were good and positive changes. And a lot of those was working with the state health department. I've got a really good relationship with them now, and I think that's very good. And I think the changes we did will help to, make sure some of the things that happened during an emergency situation last time won't happen again.
Yeah, it's just I think people surprised by the authority the state health officer has. And we've had all these kind of discussions about, should an unelected group or whatever it may be. But I sometimes you don't want politics interfering with health, but it does seem like there's got to be a better balance there.
Oh, you're exactly right. I've said all along, when you mix politics and health, you get bad politics and bad health. So I think those decisions are better left between your doctor. And if you don't trust your doctor, the other thing I say is you need another doctor.
Yeah, and well, but when it comes to like a big pandemic, and who knows, like, will this happen again in our lifetime? It very well could. But, like, you look at what happened during COVID, and there's just a general distrust in these institutions that has resulted from that, for better or for worse. But, you know, what does the next time around look like? Is it how different is it? And do you run the risk, because you have this distrust, of people just shrugging off something that could be very serious?
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And a lot of that was brought on by everybody, because one political party doesn't trust the other political party. And that's the state of politics today. If the Republican Party supports it, the Democratic Party is against it. And I think vice versa. And I think that can go really to extremes. And I don't think the extremes are good on either side.
No, a lot of it's dictated from high up in D.C. And, you know, Scott Harris, whatever you may think about him, he was just kind of following along, it seems like, with sort of the national trend, which I know a lot of states didn't do that. But then again, I mean, this is what we're hearing from the higher ups, and it seemed to kind of fall in line there.
I think you're exactly right. A lot of those decisions made, you know, were damned if you do, damned if you don't. So impossible position, both the governor and Scott Harris. And, you know, I've talked to Dr. Harris, and as a matter of fact, I told him straight out that I did not like some of the decisions he made during the epidemic. And, you know, he was a little bit taken aback by that, but also told him I would not have had his position for all the money in the world.
Yeah, it just regaining that trust in, you know, obviously, like I said, you never know when one of these things could happen again. You always hear about something on the other side of the planet or something very serious. But, I mean, that was sort of me at the onset of COVID. It just sounded like something that was going on in the Far East. Then it was cruise ships. And then it just, you know, it's sort of the world we live in today, so globalized. These things have a way of spreading faster than they ever have. And maybe this is like a real possibility, maybe more than, you know, I guess the last one was the Spanish flu epidemic. But, you know, that we are maybe more vulnerable as a society because of that.
Right. We are a more global society. I think COVID was a huge eye-opener of what can happen. It was a huge eye-opener of what did happen and how we handled it. I think we'll be better prepared. I don't think, after all the testimony and stuff before Congress, I don't think we're going to have people at the top who are going to try to make money off an epidemic. So I think maybe we've taken care of that. But, you know, whenever money's involved, you never know.
We're joined by State Representative Mark Shirey here on the program. New State House, how you feeling about it?
Oh, I can't wait. It's coming along beautifully from the tours I've had. It's beautiful inside. Hopefully we won't have the mold issues and maintenance issues that we had in the our temporary State House that we've been in forever. So I'm very excited to get into the new State House. I think it's going to be better for people who want to come and visit, especially the House. It's the people's house. So very happy about that. And hopefully we'll be a better place for people to come up and actually see us in action.
Anything you're going to miss about the old State House?
Wow. Yeah. Probably not much.
You're not the only one to answer that way. That most people are kind of like, no, not really. You know, it was the old highway to building, but just not just not a great prototype for the legislative branch, I think.
It was not. And my office was a converted closet, I think. So you have a couple people come in to sit down and talk to you about an issue, and you wind up standing up.
Yeah. Oh, and a lot of these lawmakers, it was just old storage closets, and even like representative, even like some of the more senior guys, they just had bigger closets. You know,
that's right. Just had bigger closets.
Yeah, you're getting an office in that building. Okay, you're getting an upgrade. It's just so your closet's twice the size. You're kind of a walk-in closet for your office, but that was like a real thing, right?
Yeah, it really was.
Yeah, so new state house, like everything is going to be new. Have you had a chance to really? I guess the new governor. Have you talked to him much? Well, it's likely going to be Tommy Tuberville. I don't know how Montgomery is going to react to him, but I suspect like he's going to do a lot of things very early. And we've been kind of in this status quo for like the last 10 years under Ivey administration. Maybe even some of this goes back to Bentley. You kind of look at it. Montgomery typically not very conducive to like automatic change. And I wonder how bumpy that it's going to be at the onset in 2027.
Well, I definitely think there'll be some bumps. I think that's in any administration. It's going to depend on how Coach handles that. He wants to be called Coach, not Governor. And hopefully he takes that role. He surrounds himself with good people, good, smart people who wants to affect the change that we need in the state of Alabama. He's got a friend in the legislature. So, We will do all we can. As long as it's good for Alabama, let's go.
This is the perennial question. You think we're going to do another run, make another run at gambling this year?
Oh, remember, this is the first year of the quadridium. I think we'll have a pretty much free-for-all. There'll be a ton of different bills. I think gambling will be included. I think we'll make a run at that. There's a lot of issues coming up. We just talked about data centers. I, for one, am not in favor of moratoriums on data centers. I think a lot of people are afraid of the data. I don't think they're afraid of the data center. And I think that's completely two different issues. We're working right now to get more information on data centers, the actual power usage. We know that's high. Water usage, some of these are closed systems, and you put a lot of water in to begin, and it's a closed system. So I don't know. And noise levels, we'll have to actually visit these data centers to see. I can't imagine that chillers on a roof are going to be that loud. So it's just we need to get all the information that we can. And, you know, there's tons of things that'll come up like that.
Yeah, it's become sort of the populist issue for Alabama, at least right now. I mean, it was solar farms, and I guess data centers, and, we haven't even talked about flock cameras. But these seem to be the things that are really driving the narrative right now.
Oh, I think you're right. Flock cameras are the same way. I am not opposed to flock cameras. What I am opposed is how they're used. Now, it's a great tool, but with any great tool, it can be used for bad things. I think there's definitely some guidelines that need to be put in place. You can't just go search anything. You can't go, tracking down your ex-wife 500 times through the flock cameras. That's unreasonable. But at the same time, you can't.
That's
ruled.
Right.
About Fourth Amendment searches, and it's going to be interesting on that.
Yeah, it's new technology, and trying to keep up with technology with the Alabama legislature is probably a difficult proposition. But right now, if you kind of look around Alabama, these camera systems that are being used, there's no guidelines, no guardrails, and I don't think that you've really. At least the state's not had a chance to really catch up to the new technology and say, well, you could do this, but you can't do that. Right now, it's sort of the wild, wild west.
Oh, you're exactly right. When we get new technology, it's always, we always have to react to it, because you never know. You know, you can have a new technology come up that if you want to design laws around it, then next year something replaces it, your laws are obsolete before even going into effect.
Yeah, and you know, these legislative bodies and state government in general, just not sometimes when prompted, they can move fast, but typically there's a lot of it takes a lot of time to get these things settled.
Right. Laws are hard to pass, and I tell everybody, laws are hard to pass, and they should be. So, yeah. You know, we can't move as fast as we'd like on some things just because we don't have all the information.
Representative, we got to get out of here, but you've been very kind to hop on. Let's catch up during the session, but thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me, Jeff. Have a great day.
You too. Mark Shirey, ladies and gentlemen, here on the program. We got to get a timeout in here. We will return. This is the Jeff Port Show on FM Talk 106.5.
A couple guys in first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles. Kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendant. Oh, mama, can this really be the end? To be stuck inside a mobile with the Memphis Blues again.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday morning. 251-343-0106. Still to come on the program, Danny Garrett from Trustville, state representative there, also chairman of the ETF. And then in the 11 o'clock hour, Will Hampson from P2 Public Affairs. So make sure you listen in on that as well. Wow, we got a lot of text here. 251-343-0106. If you need to be in touch with the show, all you got to do is hit me up there. Keith, I'm looking forward to having Coach as our governor. I think we will have access to him via Jeff Porter. Seems to have a great relationship with him. The current governor has given us no access for no particular reason. She doesn't give anybody access. For a while, I mean, when she first started, and there were three, she would go on Matt Nani and on Talk 995 in Birmingham, no longer a show. Rashad Hudson, I think, with CBS 42 in Birmingham. And forever, it was just Todd Stacy on Capital Journal. She hasn't been doing that appearance in the last couple of years. I was telling somebody this yesterday how it always kind of amazes me that we really kind of lost our cool over Joe Biden. And he would at least get out there and make a fool of himself and was clearly not mentally capable of being the president. However, the governor here in Alabama, we just shrug it off. In fact, like, she wins overwhelmingly. She's popular. She polls very high. Mikita, you know, you seem to be sort of in the minority here, and I'm right there with you. But what we're willing to tolerate from Kay Ivey, and the other thing is, like, well, I think it's also, I mean, potentially could it be a bad look for Republicans that we cry foul over Joe Biden, and then we tolerate Governor Ivey's sort of absence? But, yeah, Coach is committed to come on regularly. Obviously, when he's governor, he's very busy. He's very busy as a senator. But the thing about him, it's not just my show. He's on other programs throughout the state. And he may not say things that you like, but at least he'll talk. This will be, I think, for the first time in my radio career, at least, we'll be able to have access to both U.S. senators and our governor. Yeah, so looking forward to that. Because, you know, for years when it was just Ivy, Shelby, even Doug Jones, we were having Doug Jones on regularly on this program. But Shelby and The Ivy, duh. just not their thing. But I, you know, you want an opportunity, we'll be fair to you. You just come on the program. Plus, your name's Dale Jackson. 251-343-0106. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5. Look the same, what you see.